My first one is why is the SEC better than the Big 12 for the University of Missouri?
Principally because it provides longer-term, stable relationships and financial revenues at a level that the University of Missouri will be effectively utilizing in its athletic program. And we've given thought to that question and looked at the potential instability when the Big 12 was facing the loss of more members and realized there were significant risks there that we did not want to take at this time.
What role did the state budget cuts play in the switch to the SEC?
Really not any direct role at all, Mark. And I know my I was pressed in a question on that in a previous setting, but at the time I was really, in response to the question, we were reflective on it and simply knowing that we continually have to make very, very hard financial decisions in all areas, and knowing that our board had earlier insisted on us being self-sufficient in our athletic budget, those press on you in a way that is part of your thinking about the overall state of the university. So had we had ample budgets, it would have shaped our thinking a little differently. As I indicated then, that did not take away from the principal drivers and reasons, which were the issue of relative stability. So only in a very indirect way did the state budget, which is always of concern to us as a university, and as you know, I can talk about that a lot. State ought to be doing more for us. But in terms of a driver, I would say it was not a driver. It was part of the overall environmental setting that we were working in, which we have to address in everything that we do.
In your opinion, what is the most positive aspect of joining the SEC?
I think the most positive aspect is the competitiveness for one of the absolute top athletic conferences in the nation. Southeastern Conference has a tremendous reputation, of course, particularly in football. We've continued to improve in our athletic programs over the last decade in a very significant way. So it presents a bit of a competitive stretch for us. Yet, certainly, we feel we are very competitive and will continue to garner probably additional national presence as a result of being in the SEC. We also see that as a very important demographic. It's a diverse conference, diverse in terms of population, languages. It's diverse geographically, economically. It's growing very rapidly. We'd like to see some of that vitality come with us into the state of Missouri as we join the SEC, and in that sense could prove to be very beneficial for the long-term economic well-being of the state of Missouri as well.
Those are the positives. Do you see any negatives?
I don't really see major negatives at all. No, there will be an adjustment process as we seek to ensure that we have the kind of facilities that will, we think accommodate larger crowds. We hear that the fans in the Southeastern Conference travel very aggressively. We think that's a good thing. Our student athletes have to travel a bit further, a bit farther in, than they perhaps did in the Big 12, depending on which set of teams we compete with and the mix of home and away games. So that could be that is a bit of a concern, yet that's a very modest concern, but it would be in that sense that we would see any concern at all.
Are you concerned about the loss of the Kansas rivalry?
You're concerned about it, yes, because a number of Missourians and our fans and alums value that very much, and we're very sensitive to that. And that is one reason that we have been very aggressive in seeking to ensure that we have continued competition in the Kansas City area. And, of course, our Board of Curators, knowing that this was an issue, and we discussed it thoroughly with our board as we made the decision to go to the Southeastern Conference. And as you're aware, our board asked us to take a very active, aggressive role in trying to develop an invitational basketball tournament on the one hand in the Kansas City area, and then also ensuring that we have a competitive football game, either with a traditional rival or some other institution that would be attractive in the Kansas City area. So we have been very actively working on that. Director Alden is working with Jim Heater, the president of the Chamber of Commerce in Kansas City, with a committee that's been established to explore those avenues. And that's a work in progress as we speak.
Okay, I'm done with SEC. Let's switch to Coach Pinkel for a minute. How has his DWI arrest created a fight against alcohol abuse on campus? How has it helped you with your fight?
Well, I think it accentuated issues. In fact, just the day before this incident, unfortunate incident occurred, I had spent time in our faculty council meeting going over those issues of alcohol abuse with our students. And trying to instill in our faculty a deep concern about this so that they would begin on an ongoing basis to help modify student behavior in this regard. And so I'd undertaken that initiative, and this unfortunate incident certainly just added fuel to that fire, you might say, and hopefully, because this was a very unfortunate incident, and we certainly believe once in a career kind of an issue, that it will wake up our students and our faculty more to the importance of this concern and will help save some lives of future students who will not undertake that abusive behavior. So that's what we're hopeful for. And in that sense, I hope it serves a very, very good purpose in the long run.
Okay, now the Greek system just recently voted to allow alcohol back in the fraternities. Do you think the alcohol should be in the Greek system?
You know, that's a decision I have left with the leadership of the Greek community, and particularly their alums. I've had several discussions with their national directors. They feel that this is an important way to help control the use of alcohol. I'm willing to certainly give them a chance at this, and they have taken on new responsibilities themselves to be good citizens and to try to do the most effective job possible of controlling and containing alcohol abuse and bringing it down to proportions that are more acceptable. So I'm hoping it's a step in the right direction. I'm cautious, I'm concerned. I was not a big fan of it, let me say, but I am hopeful, and we will be watching this very, very closely.
We had a historic announcement on the campus yesterday with our new president.
Right.
What is your reaction to Tim Wolf? Why do you think he is the right man for the job?
Well, it's a very positive reaction, and I'd had the good fortune to spend some time with him a week ago and was very impressed with him. A very fresh perspective, very important leadership skills, very articulate about the issues and the role of the university in the state and nation. He has a tremendous international understanding of education and economic development. He will bring that perspective and strengthen our ability to interpret those issues to the legislature and to the public at large. So I think those are important attributes, and he's a very congenial individual, has a wonderful family, and really looking forward to working with him.
During his comments, he mentioned how University of Missouri is one of the fastest growing or has the largest student populations in the country. Is our student population getting too big, or can we handle this growing population that we're seeing?
Well, we're able to handle it right now, and we're watching this very carefully. He was commenting on the fact that over the last decade, the University of Missouri has been the most rapidly growing student body of the AAU universities. We always look at 34 publics, total of 61 universities in the nation, the top research scholarly institutions. We're very proud to be in that member. Some universities, however, have curbed their student growth. So student growth itself is not necessarily a good thing in and of itself. To the extent that it helps more students gain access and get the kind of education that we offer here at our university, it's a good thing. We have viewed it as a good thing historically, and continue to. Our pledge is that we will continue to provide these educational opportunities to more and more students, Missourians and students outside Missouri, as long as it does not in any way impair the quality of learning in our educational community. So we watch those indicators both for undergraduate education and graduate and research education and the growth in our research profile, particularly funding from the federal government. We do not want to see the workload be so heavy that it does not enable our top scholars to be the kind of citizens of this nation and the world that they need to be. And that's usually measured by the extent that you can compete for federal funding. So right now, we're continuing to be on an increase in all those measures. We're gaining market share in research at the same time that we're expanding our scholarship offerings and providing more opportunity for students from Missouri as well as outside Missouri.
Okay, I have one final question now. With the changes here, we have the switch to the SEC, the new president. How optimistic are you about the future of your university with all the changes that are happening right now?
Well, I'm very optimistic because the two factors you mentioned, the conference change and new leadership at the system level, are both very positive steps for the university. Our real challenge is funding. And the willingness of the people of Missouri to step up, to work with the legislature and the governor to provide more public funding to the university. We're caught between increases in state funding, which are needed, or tuition and fee increases. And certainly we're doing everything we can to raise private funds to help offset some of this, but private donors aren't looking to just offset what the state's not doing. They're looking to build a margin of excellence. And we have to look at our development campaigns along those lines. We completed the $1 billion campaign. We're very active in planning for another billion-plus campaign. But that's got to be based on a solid foundation of state support. And we need the citizens of Missouri to recognize that powerful role of economic development in the long term that the university provides. With that, then, we can continue to be extremely optimistic about our role among the nation's great universities.
Brady, thank you so much. I'll
great.
Turn
Mark,
you
thanks.
Over to everybody.
Yeah, great.
I really appreciate everybody's cooperation on letting me doing that first.
Right? Thank you. And, Mark, let me say I appreciate that. I knew that a number of people had asked to see me, and because of our came at a terrible time. I had to reallocate a lot of time through the SEC discussion and trying to make that up now. And so this was a good. I appreciate your all's cooperation, simply giving me the chance to talk to you all at one time. And along
everything
with
fell together
Mike
perfectly.
Alden, so happy about
it
that.
It was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, good. Have a Merry Christmas and a good holiday.
To you.
Tomorrow night.
Mary Jo, would it work well for us to maybe just kind of take turns? I mean, so that we're not yelling over each other.
CLG.
Wrestling.
Sure.
Sure.
Go ahead and start.
Just so happen to start putting this on the table. Okay.
See you, Mike.
Bye, Mark.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You too,
Mike.
Merry Christmas, too. We'll be watching you.
Oh, yeah. I'll be off Christmas week.
I guess one thing I wanted to start with anyway was just sort of looking back at the evolution of how this came about, and many signs to me anyway have pointed to the tipping point sort of being about September 2nd when President Boren spoke. Coach Pinkel told us last week, I hadn't heard this before, but was it only a day before that you had taken another survey or vote of Big 12 leaders and they had re-upped or pledged? He had that impression.
We had just very recently re-upped our pledge. I'd actually have checked the record on the date. And so we had had a board meeting in which everyone was solid, ready to go. And that occurred just prior to, I believe, the courting of the Pac-12. So say a day before, it could have been a few days before. So the courting of the Pac-12 caught us all by surprise because we had all just gone. We knew Texas A&M was gone. I was chair at that time, so we were all pulling together. We knew we had some top prospects to bring into the Big 12. And then to suddenly wake up and hear that four of the institutions are looking at the Pac-12 was quite a surprise to us. Nevertheless, my role was, and I embraced it very heartily at that time, was to try to do everything possible to keep the league going forward. And in fact, during that period, David Boren and I flew to Texas A&M, College Station, to meet with Boyne Lofton to try to talk him into, I believe that was the 28th of August, as I recall. So the 28th, even though we knew they were courting the Pac-12, I was still very solid thinking, hey, we can make this thing work out. We might even talk to A&M into coming back. We knew we had some other prospects. So everything was still very gung-ho. And so it was shortly after that trip to Texas A&M, in which I had some high-quality time, let me say, and I mean this, we're all affectionate with each other. Great leaders among the chancellors, presidents of the Big 12. Let me say, a great group of colleagues that I've really, really enjoyed working with and will continue to work with them on all the academic issues that we face nationally. We are real friends and colleagues in that regard. But then to see the comments shortly after that, hey, the options were all still open, and the remaining five institutions at that time, if you think about it, make up the Big 12. We were looking at ourselves at that point, saying, "Gosh, what would happen if this really should occur? Are there enough institutions to repopulate the Big 12?" And I think this is a part the public really has not understood. And what we were confronted with, as Mike and I came together shortly after that, in fact, at the Miami game, we're sitting there going, the public needs to recognize that at that point. The remaining five, I think there was some negative term we'd been labeled at that time, the forgotten five, I believe it was. It was like, what do you think? What does the public think we're thinking about? We're saying, what in God's name are we going to do? And are there enough? We start counting institutions. you had some people I know thinking, hey, maybe the Mountain West is the best we can do. And I don't mean to say anything negative about the Mountain West, but it wasn't what we were actually aspiring to. What became clear to us at that point was we've got to carefully examine what the future is for the University of Missouri. Does it lie with trying to repopulate the Big 12? Does it lie with joining a different conference as a group or individually or in some combinations? All those were possible. It was only then, really, even though we had a sense of what was happening nationally with conference, it was only then that we really began to start doing hard groundwork to say what's possible for the University of Missouri at that point. And we were deeply concerned about the future of our athletic program.
After the Pac-12 then decided not to take those four schools, was there anything the Big 12 could have done at that point to convince you to stay?
Oh, you know, I would have had to have... I'm not sure that there was, and I'm sure that there wasn't, because what became clear was that there was a lot of factors on the table that were being examined that weren't going to be resolved, and the Big 12 was, in fact, undertaking some reform that we had been pushing for, equal revenue distribution, the high school net, high school games not being shown on the Longhorn Network, but it was clear that every move we were making was a struggle and an uncertain one. It was sowing potential seeds of dissension from school to school. And it was sort of like you were setting an environment saying, okay, who's gonna be the next one to say they're going here, there, or elsewhere because of one of these little glitches that are occurring in the discussion process. So I wouldn't want to say nothing because it's conceivable that an environment could have been created that would have said, hey, this is absolutely where we're going. Missouri, you're part of this. You will be. We're all set. It was clear that that was not going to occur. And for us, the question was, do we continue to struggle? Do we continue to try to be the good citizens that we think we have been all along, knowing that in spite of our absolute best efforts, four institutions or more are willing to just fly off and try out something different? And it was clear it was going to happen. We thought it certainly was going to happen again at the next opportunity that arose. And so that way, we had to do what we've all said, our commitment to the institution comes first. So shortly after that, we met with our board. Our board discussion of these issues led them to say, look, start exploring alternatives. At that point, as you know, I resigned then as chair of the board. I could not continue. Up to that point, I'd been absolutely committed and doing everything I knew to do to try to hold the Big 12 together and for it to grow and expand in a way that was quality and responsible.
To divert from your, I'm going to be more interested in the academic impact, just with my listenership, so I'd hate to divert from your guys' discussion. So any more postmortem stuff you want, you could probably keep going if you'd like.
Whatever everybody thinks is best, and we can certainly, whatever you're most comfortable with. You want to stay on one topic? Just because time will dry up.
That's fine. Well, then I guess one thing obviously interested at this point is the process with the exit fee, where that stands now and where you expect that to go, how you expect that process to go.
And let me say, we are currently exchanging correspondence on the exit fee, and there will be a process in place, not yet fully determined. We're actually negotiating that now, so really there's not a lot I can say about that. Maybe I should have said that up front. That is a question that is on the table, and we'll be most likely negotiating over the next month on that issue with the Big 12.
One question about the actual payment whenever it does happen. I know we're not to that point yet, but how does that factor in? Does that payment come through a general fund from the athletic department? How does that payment go through?
All exit fees will be paid for by the athletic program. There will be no general obligation funds, as we call them, no taxpayers' money or no student fees associated with the payment. We're clear on that, and we know that's doable. Actually, we know that's doable under the worst of circumstances, but we're hoping for good circumstances here. So,
Marcus, who?
I was just going to say, take a step back, and for the athletic skeptic alumni out there who have, maybe you can explain why, just in general, having a successful, high-profile athletic program can be a benefit to a university.
I'll start, and certainly Mike Alden, invite him from my standpoint to make further comments on it, but it's important because it's very much part of American higher education, and particularly the major public institutions of our country. The athletic competition brings tremendous visibility to the university. It gives student athletes the absolute highest caliber competitive environment to be the best that they can be. And I know when Mike and I first began working together, our commitment to each other was to enable the academic and the athletic programs at this university to be the absolute best that they can be. And in our judgment, the Southeastern Conference provides that opportunity in a way that we were feeling unclear about whether we could provide that for the future. And this is not a sudden knee-jerk decision. It was not an emotional decision. It's very much, and I've said this before, you know, a decision of the head overruling in some cases the feelings of the heart that said, oh, we love the traditions of the Big 12. We love our colleagues and other universities, and we have great friendships. Fans are comfortable traveling to various venues. We understand that. And that's, you give that up. You give it up because of, you're looking 50 to 100 years down the road. You've got to make the kinds of decisions that will lead to strong foundations for this university. And we felt that allied with the Southeastern Conference in this case.
I think as we've looked at it too, Marcus, is we've always tried to express athletics as being clearly not the most important thing we do at the University of Missouri. Our undergraduate education, our professional education, our faculty, our research, all those things, that's what we're all about. We just happen to be a very strong advertising vehicle for the institution. And so college athletics, whether it's here or at any other institution at our level, you can utilize that to be a tremendous advertising vehicle for what you're trying to do as an institution. And that's always been our goal. And I think that we've seen that be successful, and we've been very fortunate to have that success resonate through our association with the Big 12. And we see that actually ramping up even further and at a higher level now with our association with the SEC. So that's how we try to utilize those athletics associations to really be able to be an advertising vehicle for what we're trying to do as an institution. And the SEC provides us an even greater footprint to be able to do that.
Yeah, and let me say, I know I speak for Mike also. We're very proud of the role we played in the Big 12. And my goodness, we feel so excited about it because we feel like we've helped move that conference forward to where it is today. And we rejoice, you know, with the Heisman Award going to quarterback at Baylor, one of our colleague institutions, and so I'm happy for them, and we wish them the best as we look to the future. Yet we have to honor the decisions that need to be made institution by institution, and we've seen that with others that have left the Big 12. The world continues to change, and we need to do what is best for the University of Missouri as our primary responsibility.
Megan? Maybe more a technical thing, but the tipping point apparently was about September 2nd. How did the process with the SEC get engaged? Who called the SEC? And can you tell us what relationships with the SEC mattered? I mean, did you sit down with President, do you pronounce it Machen? I'm sorry.
Machens.
In New York when you were at the AAU dinner. Did Mike, I think you had a colleague that used to be the commissioner of your conference when you were at Southwest Texas State. Did any of these things matter in all this?
Sure, and they do. And let me say, with Bernie Machens, an individual I've worked with for many, many years, as is true of many others, of course, in the Big 12 as well as the SEC, it's remarkable if you've worked as long in the academic world as I have that you end up knowing most of the leadership in those institutions. I'd had at least a year's long conversation with Bernie Machens about what was happening at Florida and the SEC. He knew what was happening in the Big 12 and another conference. It's a point of some conversation in between the various academic issues we're involved with. In fact, I did sit down, had dinner with Bernie and others. We had a larger table, but we made a point of sitting at the AAU meeting, in fact, and had at that time a good discussion about the, and I had called him, yes. Once we made the decision to look, I called Bernie to determine whether the SEC was willing to, and how they felt. I tried to get a sense of how they felt about the University of Missouri, and it told him that we were considering the possibility of applying for membership.
Was he able to get right back to you on that, or just as a...
He made a point of emphasizing that no decision can be made until it's voted on by the members of the SEC, and they can only vote if there's an application in front of them. So, and that was never a promise made beyond that. And yet, in talking to him and others, we had a sense that we were viewed as a very favorable candidate, and we were a university that they were very pleased to consider. We knew that because of the academic strengths of the University of Missouri, and a very important factor, as we found out actually in all the conferences we talked to, the University of Missouri's AAU status and its history as a prominent university is very high currency. And the athletic conferences, the major BCS conferences, are looking for those kinds of qualities in the universities that they seek to attract.
You know, Vahe, I don't, and I know that the SEC, they were not looking to expand. That was not their, I mean, they were not out soliciting people to be able to join the SEC. And I think with us, you know, with all the relationships, I think, that we build over the course of time. I mean, Mike Slive's known me since 1985 when I first met him, and Greg Sankey, who's the guy you talked about, who's their senior associate commissioner, and Mark Womack and Larry Templeton and Jeremy Foley at Florida and Jeff Long at Arkansas. I mean, all those folks, you know, we interact all the time on various types of things. But so I know that after that time that you're talking about, after, you know, September 2nd, September 3rd, certainly that's where you might be calling around to be able to say, hey, look, you know, do you ever think there might be an opportunity in case something, this all blows up at the, you know, in the Big 12. But that was certainly after, you know, those points in time and certainly, you know, working together with Dr. Deaton.
What was your reaction when Oklahoma scheduled the press conference a few minutes before yours after the Pac-12 had decided not to expand? And then President Warren kind of gave the impression that everybody was on board with granting these rights and going forward, which was kind of contradicted what you said that night. What was your take on that?
And let me say, in two important parts of your question, really, and one had to do with the press conference timing. We had actually intended, I was chair of the board and had an obligation, as I told the board, I'm going to have a press conference at 6:30, I believe, or something like that. Oklahoma scheduled theirs to be the same time. I mean, it was really not an intentional. We were delayed here in the work I was doing. I had other issues I had to deal with, and so I was late getting into the news conference here. But just for the record, it was really true that you could question, you know, people have questioned, should have even had a press conference. I think he felt he needed to because they'd been out courting the Pac-12. Now he was saying, oh, no, we're back now. But he scheduled it so that it would be the same time as the one here. And so because of the delay I had then, they just went ahead. Well, we weren't communicating at that point. We'd had a board meeting, as I recall, before that in the day. And then it was funny how, you know, his electronic leak here that brought his conference into mind. I thought that was very funny. I'm sure he did, too. Actually, I don't think he and I have not even discussed that point. But we're good friends, and, you know, there was absolutely nothing intended there in that regard. The different interpretation is very explainable. I was sticking to the language that the board had decided on. And honestly, you will have to go back and recreate. I can't recall right off. But it had to do with the fact that that the board action had to do with the intent to undertake a process. And I knew that I had supported that because I knew I was going to undertake that process. He interpreted as probably a good number of them did because they'd already resolved it. We had not, and I made it clear to them we had not. But they had, and so he was saying, oh, we've all agreed to go down that pathway. And as I say, I'm forgetting the actual specific right now. But so he worded it his way, the way that would be, I'd say, a popular, you might say, like a lay person would have said it. I was being very technical because I needed to be, not only as chair of the board, but also because it had been worded that way because we were not there. We knew that our board, it had to do with the granting of rights, as I recall. We knew our board was not at all, had made any decision to grant the rights. And for all institutions, that requires board approval. And so as a case of where the different institutions were at a little bit different level as they agreed on that process. So that's, in fact, what happened at that time. And again, Dave and I, we did talk after that, and we both fully recognized why the wording would have been different between the two of us. We chatted about that later on.
Throw a completely different idea at you. As far as the academic impact goes, enrollment, we talked about how large the enrollment is at the university now. And, you know, there's also been allusion to the fact that when the football team was ranked number one a few years ago, the next year we saw a huge boom in applications and enrollment. And there's some, if I understand, some research that shows there is some sort of tie to the amount of time you're on TV in a place and the students you draw. Now, is there a concern that when we leave the Big 12 and we maybe leave, I mean, we draw a lot of students from Texas, general enrollment students from Texas and some of the other Big 12 universities. Is there a concern in shifting to this new demographic, if you will?
Not really. It's been, we have discussed it, but a concern, no. We see it really as more on the positive side. The data will show that higher athletic visibility attracts more applicants, not necessarily more enrollees. We, however, have more applicants and enrollees, and we're right at the margin in terms of, you know, being able to manage this process, and we're watching it very, very carefully. We have, and even we had record enrollment growth during the bad years athletically as much as we did during the good years, just to be fair, let me say. That's worth pointing out, even though the applications did go up with the athletic success. The point is, the brand of Missouri has been increasing now for the last decade. We've had record enrollments, I believe, essentially every year of the last decade, and in good and bad years, and it will continue. We do not see we will continue to recruit in Texas because we're in the Southeastern Conference with another Texas institution, Texas A&M. will continue to attract out-of-state students from Chicago, Minneapolis, as well as Texas. Those are three big feeders, Illinois generally, you know, not Big 12 regions, really. We really don't expect that to be affected in any negative way at all. Possibly there might be a little bit of a diminution in the Dallas area, if we project, conjecture. But the potential of expanded enrollment from the southeastern region is quite high. Because now you've got a school in the conference that'll be getting a lot of attention, and you therefore, what happens with athletic success is students look at that institution, and as they do that, they'll find the kind of quality institution that they will find very attractive. So we have actually more alums in the Southeastern Conference than we do in the Big 12. So we expect our alumni base to help us all across the Southeastern region, and more students looking our way. We reasonably project an increase in applications.
Well, I was going to ask that too. I mean, socioeconomically, is that an attraction to the SEC versus the Big 12 region? If I understand correctly, some projections have that area growing more in the coming decades compared to old stomping grounds.
Yes, I mean the growth in the Southeastern Conference and the that speaks well for the future student body and its attraction generally. In Missouri, we feel we'll benefit from being a part of that. And how that plays out in terms of, you know, it's those students that will want to go out of state from the Southeastern Conference that will look at Missouri.
You have anything else, Marcus?
Yeah. Sorry, I guess I'm hung up on deconstructing how this whole thing happened, but you alluded to talking to President Matchens as far as a year ago back, and was there any sort of discussion or engagement on any level with the SEC as far back as when the Big 12 was already in such chaos a year back? What was the run-up, if any, with the SEC, with people sort of having a sense of each other?
Oh, you know, and let me say, with many of the BCS conferences, we talked with colleagues, they would have indicated, and I'm virtually sure, colleagues in the SEC said, oh, one of these days, you know, we'd really love to have Missouri in the SEC. I mean, that's been said to me by many of the leaders in the SEC over the past several years, actually, because everyone's always looking down the road. I've heard the comment, oh, Missouri really ought to be part of the Southeastern Conference. It's the kind of comment that you would hear, only in that sense, you know, that I'm sure I'd have discussions with Bernie as well, you know, as he looks to the future.
And just along with that, one quick follow-up on that is, did in the process of vetting or due diligence of all this, you said you were in contact with other conferences. Was a specific call ever made to the Big Ten and say, do you think about Missouri? Because you were certainly checking out a number of situations, it sounds like.
Early on, really, in the even earlier in the summer, in AAU meetings, places like that, it was clear that the Big Ten was not expanding. They were not in expansion mode. I had at least one or more of the presidents there tell me, oh, we've just had a meeting with the whole Big Ten, and it's not something that's on our radar screen. So that was early information, actually, that we knew. They were not in expansion mode. We knew that several of the other conferences were potentially, And the SEC, in fact, it was clear they were quite content with 13 teams. They were not in expansion mode either. I think when they continued to look and we made the inquiry then, they said, well, you know, maybe we could go ahead at this stage, although it had not been planned.
I think some of the reaction in the Big 12 is that Missouri is leaving because they don't like the instability of the Big 12, but maybe Missouri contributed to the instability of the Big 12 last year. What's your response to that?
Well, there was, I smile because there was so much going on the previous year that to pinpoint any given institution and say they contributed to the instability is a stretch. There was two institutions that ended up leaving the Big 12, of course, and you'd have to look at those institutions, and you have to look at the reasons that led them to that, and the reasons for instability go much deeper than, you know, than a given incident of even a university leaving. It's the formation. It's a natural kind of growth process. I'm not pointing any fingers here at all, but you've had the coming together of the old Southwestern Conference with the Big Six, Big Eight, I guess it was, and that process has just continued to work. Anytime you get those kinds of cultural integration occurring, conference integration, organization, you get some dissension occurring, some organizational glitches that can create an environment that doesn't have the greatest stability. You're hoping as you do those things, and I'm sure the Big 12 originally had hoped that this would be, and I think to some extent it has been. I mean, it's brought a bunch of diverse, very strong institutions together, very strong athletic competition, and that's resulted in some, you hope it'll be thriving. It's just that it's been a bit more rugged, you might say, in the Big 12 than it has been some other institutions like the SEC that's never had an institution leave its conference. They sort of had this slow organic growth process, and I think they added two schools a few years back.
1991,
and then two now recently. But so it's just, and that's just more or less historical. Again, it's not that somebody's out to try to wreck anything. It's just the nature of how organizations come together and evolve and try to work out their problems.
Again, academically, as far a lot of, in the run up to this, the AAU, in fact, we were an AAU school, and the possible loss of research opportunities was something that was talked about a lot. What opportunities do you see in the SEC? And I know, like, for instance, in the Big 12, they had specific grant money for, cooperations between schools. Is there anything like that in the SEC, or what opportunities do you see?
There are, and let me say, there is no loss of research opportunities associated with this conference move at all. For the most part, our scholarship and research continues unabated. I mean, our faculty work with colleagues all over the world, and, in the Ivy League, in the Big Ten, in the Pac-12 conferences. I mean, scholarship and research does not align with conferences. Many conferences, though, and the Big Ten probably led the way on this with their CIC organization that across the Big Ten includes the University of Chicago, that doesn't compete athletically, but they have strong scholarly endeavors. The Southeastern Conference has tried to do that themselves very strongly, and that their center, academic center, in fact, is located, last I heard, at the University of Arkansas. So they do provide these kinds of collegial opportunities to exchange faculty, to work together and try to promote some regional research interest. The Big 12 did that also, and when I was provost here, in fact, I led a delegation of provosts of the Big 12, for example, in meetings with the European Union leadership. And that's led to some continuing interest and activity. So we've tried it, we will continue to promote that no matter where we are. And as you stretch and look at a new conference and new opportunities, it's likely you'll get a bit of additional stimulus for aspects of research and scholarship. I was thinking earlier today, and I was talking to someone about the Oak Ridge National Laboratory near Knoxville, Tennessee. That's a huge nuclear reactor, and our faculty often will, we have a huge research reactor on this campus, the largest of any university in the nation. But the Oak Ridge National Labs, of course, the Manhattan Project was centered there. It's huge, and it's not a research, it does do research, but it's really a power reactor also. It has huge research capacity, though. And so as our faculty travel there, it's likely that someone will say, hey, let's run up to Oak Ridge and get a look at that reactor. And out of that, as you talk to each other, you sometimes can develop new new research activity. The geographic differences in the Southeast and the seascape and the different mix of research programs hopefully will prove stimulating to some of our faculty as well. And that, in addition, you lose nothing. You've given up nothing in terms of scholarship and collaborative research with other institutions you're working with, whether it's Big 12 or elsewhere. But you gain then that additional stimuli from new friends and colleagues that you may make.
Is Marcus, is it correct to have the perception you as quite torn, at least before September 2nd, and this was rather grueling for you to try to figure out what to do because you were obviously dedicated to Missouri, but you'd taken your role quite seriously. And as part of that, can you just take us through, to what degree you can, your call to President Matchin's that day? Were you sitting in your office? Was he sort of, I thought you might be calling? Or any details you could share?
Well, let me say, I was quite torn about commitment we had to the Big 12 when I began to see it as very problematic. And that came fairly late because I was gung-ho on moving things in the right direction and had good support from colleagues in doing that. When that began to fragment, I realized I had to do what was best for the University of Missouri. The way was not clear at that point. We had to begin exploring what the options were, and so I wanted to do that only with our own board approval, board of the curators of the university. So we got that approval, and from there it was move ahead as quickly as possible to assemble information, and that's when I would have made a call to Bernie Matchins, and he had been observing, of course, what had been going on around the country. So. And most presidents and chancellors at that point were. I mean, we were all looking and said, my goodness, that's going on here. ACC is doing that. We began trying to sort out what's happening here around the country.
So just to clarify, it wasn't like you called him September 2nd or 3rd? Had you already been assembling information at that point?
We've assembled some information generally that we've had ongoing, and we have a general sense, and we had compiled some information over the last year about different conferences as there was the upheaval in the in the Big Ten and the Big 12, and we were looking at what's happening in these various conferences. So we had some information compiled. I don't remember the exact date actually, but it would have been after our Board of Curators meeting when I was asked to explore the options.
Okay, great.
And Vahe, that would not be unusual for us to maintain and continue to refresh that type of information.
Right.
We have comparative data on all of the BCS conferences all the time.
And
so how they're doing academically, what's their research like, what's the alumni base like, what's their competitive size of their stadiums, sizes of their budgets. We have stuff like that.
And let me say, we have that on an ongoing basis nationally.
Right.
And we cut it whatever way we want to cut
it.
Often we'll say, I wonder how that compares to X group of universities. So it's literally a few minutes, you whack that out, and then it's a matter of deciding, what indicators do we really want to look at here?
I just was trying to paint a picture in my mind of a furious Brady Deaton in his office calling immediately or something.
I'd say it's fair to say it's much more deliberative than that. I mean, because really, it looks chaotic, and there's a lot of intense communications. But it's very deliberative with regard to, we're going to meet with the Board of Curators tomorrow. I feel I should update them on this, talk to Steve Owens, Phil Hoskins, and we say, all right, let's put that on the agenda so that we can have time. Then we explore those, and from that we lay out basically a work plan, and boom, boom, boom. The other interesting aspect is there were really no delays in this process. From a public standpoint, there's always the sense that, oh, my gosh, you should just immediately do these things. Well, the reality is you really cannot do it that way because there's too many people that are part of the decision process and the legal process. We're very careful to do this the right way. We don't like to backtrack. And as you will see in this case, we did no backtracking. Any preliminary work, and I will not point any fingers around the country, but you can look very quickly at all the backtracking that's been done. Nobody said, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, and then 6 months later, are they really or not? It's still up in the air. We don't do things that way. We're very careful, very thorough. And once we began that process, it did not take me personally long to make up my mind about which way we should go, let me say. I think a lot of people think, and I understand it. Well, I'm sitting on the decision. Or at that point, we're literally analyzing, comparing information. And once I saw the range of options here, I said, if we can go this way, that's the way we should go. But before that's public, of course, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got to, you don't want to make a decision, have the Board of Curators override you the next day either. So, and you can't say certain things because you've not checked them out with various other critical parties to this. So all that was taking place through that process.
Can you say with certainty you will be in the SEC in 2012? There's this situation with West Virginia maybe not getting out of the Big East, and that could have ramifications for you guys.
You know, our full plans are to go in 2012, and we think West Virginia will be in the Big 12 in 2012. There is the technical possibility. We don't think it's very likely at all, and as you can tell by our actions, and we're reasonably confident, and you know we have some assurances of that, I do not want to take away from the legal technicality that you're speaking of there, that anything can happen.
If West Virginia doesn't come to the Big 12, does it?
We're going to the SEC regardless.
Okay.
Right. Because we're on our own pathway here. I've had good discussions with the president of West Virginia over time, and I understand where they are, and he understands where we are, I think, and we'll proceed.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt, Joe, but I was in Birmingham yesterday, and you know, in a week we'll be rolling out the 2012 football schedule, and so I can assure you that 14 institutions that were there working for the last day and a half in Birmingham are all set, and all plans and everything is set for Mizzou and Texas A&M being part of the SEC in 2012, and we'll come out with that schedule. The SEC will the middle of next week, so they'll showcase that the middle of next week.
We made application, just as, and this, I guess, as a point of fact, we made application to the SEC after having phone calls of assurance from the Big 12 commissioner and chair of the board that it was okay to do that from their standpoint. We then, later on, got a call that said, we're not sure about this, that, and the other, because we're not sure. West Virginia may have some difficulties. And I said to them, look, you set things in motion, we've set things in motion, and we're continuing down this pathway, and we feel certainly we're within our rights to do that according to our bylaws. So that actually, wait, it addresses, Joe, your point directly.
I just keep killing the mood of every one of these.
That's what it's for.
This is kind of a step back question, but as the leader of an academic institution, I don't even want to know how many hours you were spending per week on athletics. Is that something you expected coming into this role? And, you know, what's it like to know that 100 years from now, one of the first things on that list of things you did might be oversaw a move to SEC? You know, I mean, how does that fit into the strange job?
Coming into the position, you really don't know all that will occupy your time. And so in that sense, the intensity of this certainly could not have been anticipated exactly. And yet, it's part of the job. There are other factors that we deal with that sometimes take just as much time that, in a sense, receive no public attention as is appropriate. But nevertheless, I'm having to do a lot here. But that's taking nothing away from your observation that this was a particularly intensive time for all of us. I mean, Mike and I in constant communications, and then in communications with everyone, depending on the nature of it, either with all my colleagues in the Big 12 through a period, and then to the SEC with the board chair and the commissioner there later on, but that was very late in the process. The most intense activity, of course, had to do with communication with my colleagues in the Big 12 as that was going along. That was just unbelievable, really, for all of us. And so, it is very intense. It's something that, though one does in these roles, you do what you need to do to move the institution forward in all of its components, and that includes athletics, student affairs, research, extension, the various little programs we have in the university, international programs. All those things are going on all the time. And you have crises of one sort or another from time to time. And I, just a slight amount of interest and irony here, as I'm getting ready to go over to announce the SEC with Mike Slive and Mike and everyone, the last thing I dealt with was a crisis in Korea, and with one of our faculty members traveling in China, and they're trying to get in touch with him and say, you cannot come in because it's dangerous for your life. And so there, we're dealing with that, and we're calling, we're having messages go to presidents, three different universities in Shanghai, because we knew he was speaking at one of those. So, you're constantly in the role we play, as the leader of the university, you're dealing with a range of issues all the time. And even as you're doing the one that was so focused, you had to actually do several other things that were very important at the moment. And so I found that a bit ironic, actually, as we talked about it. I said, can you believe this? Here we are going off to this, and you got to deal with Shanghai and Shanghai Normal and Fudan Universities in Shanghai, because Andy Williamson was giving a speech at one of those places, and we had to make sure the message got to him not to go the next leg of his trip to Korea.
And it
all worked, in fact.
Yeah, and may I say, that's one of the big reasons why it's taken us this long and why we've had to do this interview with everyone simultaneously, because then after the SEC major press announcement, then Dr. Deaton has had to take time to catch up on all his other responsibilities.
Right,
so
yeah. Now
that's
one right,
of the reasons
there was,
it's been
right.
so long
yeah.
to be able to get him in front of all you all. We have time for one more really good question, so maybe you guys put your heads together.
And they've all been really
one
good.
One good.
These are good, good discussions.
Phenomenal.
Well, I've got two I'm going to nominate, and if anybody, you know, just one is it, because we have you both here, and we have not really gotten an update on Coach Hayes' status with the NCAA. I'd like to just hear what we can know about that, and or ask about just structurally, Mike, what has to happen now with SEC. Those are my two nominations. Anybody got anything better?
Well, I'm not saying it's better, but I had one question about your opinion on the use of the grant of media rights to hold a conference together, and if that had been suggested previous to when it was all done in September, if like last spring or whatever, if that idea ever came forth and if it ever came to a vote.
Let me answer that one first.
If
you want me, because Mike will probably address more of the others. But the grant of media rights, we use that term in the Big 12 a lot, and I know Mike Slive indicated they don't use it much in the SEC because they never think of that, yet they actually do have to pull the bundle together to market, and that's really what they're talking about in the Big 12 also, although we have rules. The university only grants rights if the board acts. So a lot of formalities built into that. But no, that's been on the table all along, and various votes have been taken or discussed, in terms of formal action. I'd look at the record, because we knew there was going to have to be a coming together and granting rights. Actually, there had been none of that, though. We had all agreed, sort of like the SEC, up to this point. But at this point, because of all that was happening, they felt, gosh, we're going to have to grant these rights for a certain time period and lock it in, or we're never going to keep things together. So it was an attempt on the part of the Big 12 to try to keep itself together. And I'm not negative on that at all, necessarily. But the university then has to be real clear what it's doing, where it's going at that point. In the past, we had all agreed that we would pledge so that you can broadcast our games, and we would have some kind of a document that illustrated our agreement to it, but it never went as formal as the official granting of rights.
And that's unusual. I don't think you see grant of rights discussed at conferences. I mean, that's just not a typical topic that you see. Hey, what are we doing in the ACC? Are we doing all this grant of rights? What about in the Big Ten? What about in the Pac-12? What about in the SEC? It's just not a topic that was ever, you don't hear that discussed. I think if you look at that, that's been an issue that really centered around, almost solely around the Big 12. Yeah. And it's interesting because even in August, just a few months ago, we get this emergency phone call, right, which is not unusual, from our commissioner that said, hey, you got to fly to Dallas. I don't know where I was coming from. I was coming from Lake Tahoe on my vacation. And I get this call, and I'm saying, hey, you got to get to Dallas. We got to get this meeting because we all got to get together, because we all got to repledge again, because I think this is middle of August. A&M's going to go do this, and we all got to make sure. So everybody gets on planes, and we all fly to Dallas, Texas, and met at the Hyatt, the DFW Hyatt. I remember this exactly. So I'm schlepping in there, and we get into a room, and we're all together. So, okay. I just talked to Brady. Okay, we all good, boss? I got to get there. Yeah, oh, yeah, we're all in, right? I'm the chair. We got everything together. So everybody gets in the room, had to fly all the way to Dallas, and then all of a sudden you got a couple of schools, and I don't know about that. I don't know if we want to. So what? I thought we were all together.
We all worked that out.
So that was, for us, in our league, at least what I had heard, and I learned and I know around the country, that is highly unusual that you would hear people sit there and talk about, okay, we're going to grant our rights, and how long are we going to do that for? I mean, that's just an unusual deal. So, tag on to that a little bit, but I found it was interesting because as recently as the middle of August, you know, everybody's having to fly immediately. You've got to fly. We all got to be together and all that stuff. But you know, the other things too, Vahe, on the Miami situation. You know, that's a frustrating deal for everyone, I think, concerned. We have been in constant communication with the NCAA and trying to be accessible and willing to work. And I know Frank has been available, and everyone has been wanting to be as accommodating, I mean, as we possibly can. And yet the process itself, we have pledged to be working directly with the NCAA, helping them in whatever we can relative to the University of Miami. And yet the process itself is just continues to be a slow and can be a very frustrating process. So we don't have any timetable out there about when the NCAA will do their deal with Miami. We don't know what the outcome of their work with Miami is going to be. And so with us, we just keep working and keep communicating and keep being supportive and doing all the things that we can. So I know that was kind of it's almost like a non-answer because there isn't one other than we just continue. Is that, that would be accurate, you know, keep everybody up to speed.
Have they interviewed him yet, though?
You know, with their process, they sit there and they talk with our compliance people. And the reason for that is we avail ourselves to them. Mizzou has nothing to do with that. So have they talked with Frank? Yeah, I'm sure they've, you know, talked with him and spent some time with him, you know, over the phone or whatever. And they keep us in the loop on that. But as far as those official interviews and all that stuff, shoot, they don't make us privy to all of that kind of stuff that they're doing, you know. So.
And let's never mind the other one because we already took you over time and maybe I can ask you.
No, what was the other one?
Oh, it was just structural about, you know, now what do we do?
It's an amazing amount of work. I mean, if you think about this, there's not a textbook about that's been written that says, okay, this is how you transition into a new conference. There is no textbook, you know. And
I've,
well, I know that we've talked to other people, and yesterday, as recently as yesterday, I think a lot of people think that this thing centers Vahe around scheduling. Holy, I mean, there's so much. That's what we were talking about, right, Marcus? There's so much more that goes into this as far as travel plans are concerned, hotel reservations, academic needs that the league has, academic reporting that the league has, compliance reporting that the league has,
scholarship management.
I mean, there's just on and on. So there's a whole cadre of issues that we're working with. Now, Tim Hickman in our department has been identified as the transition person with a whole team. We have a whole team of people at Mizzou that includes the Alumni Association and our public affairs office and others that we're working as a team. And we really see this transition as being a year and a half transition, that while we're going to be going in officially July 1st, 2012, it's going to take us at least these 6 months and another 12 months just to kind of get our feet on the ground about this is how we do it, this is how the process works. And then from their end, being the SEC, Larry Templeton is the person that chairs their transition team. So they meet with us. They meet with Texas A&M to help, really, on all of these communication levels. But really, it involves the Alumni Association. It involves student affairs. It involves public affairs. It involves all these areas that it's going to take at least 18 months to really feel like we've got our feet on the ground.
And then the city of Columbia also, in terms of transition. The chamber has appointed a committee, I know, that's involved in sort of community transition issues.